Thank you for listening to the Shanghai Community Fellowship Podcast. To find out more about the SCF community, listen to sermons, and upcoming events, visit us at shanghaifellowship.org.
We're really excited today because this is the second Sunday after Easter. And in the church calendar, Easter is such a powerful, significant day in the life of the follower of Jesus that we mark time according to the day that Jesus was raised from the dead. And, you know, of course, in the first century, at the original first resurrection, when Jesus was raised, he was still on the planet. He was still engaged with his followers and having conversations with different ones and different groupings of the followers of Jesus. And of course, it was a really difficult time. I mean, we think of the resurrection and the celebration of it, of course, I mean, and rightfully so. But at that time, there was a lot of uncertainty. I mean, not about Jesus's resurrection. Here he is. We see him. We're interacting with him. But what happens now? You know, and then when Jesus starts talking about he's leaving, going to be going to my Father, and you know, it created a lot of uncertainty for the followers of Jesus. What happens now? And they're trying to remember how he said he was going to promise to send the Comforter. He wouldn't leave them as orphans, is what he had said. But you know, how that is. You know, it's one thing when you heard all those things from Jesus, but now's the time when it's actually happening. And it's a hard time. It's a difficult time. In many ways, it's a time of uncertainty, but a time of anticipation. In some ways, like the time that we live in today, yeah. A time of uncertainty, anticipation, and a lot of questions. What's happening now, and what's going to happen next? And as we talked about, if you were with us last week, Jesus doesn't leave the disciples with just the promise of resurrection, their personal resurrection, but very strongly what he's doing is he's calling them to the mission that brought Jesus to earth in the first place. The heart of the Father to send the Son to redeem and save the lost. And Jesus is pretty much reminding them of everything he had said. Mm-hmm. We're in this together. This is just how I said it was going to be. And now I've gone to the cross. I've offered my life for the sins of the world. My Father has raised me from the dead. I'm going and returning to my Father. Now I am commissioning you, my followers, to carry on the mission. And you can only imagine just the rush of emotions and the things that are going through their head. You know, what is going on? And it sounds right, but yet, how do I join this? And what is he asking me to do it again? And it's hard to imagine how it would have been for his original followers as they're just taking this all in, and he's again talking about leaving, and it's really the same way today. It's a conversation with the resurrected Christ about where we are now and what he has called us to do. Yeah. even in times of uncertainty, when we're not really sure about the future. But yet we have the sense of anticipation at the same time. We are called as Christ followers to make disciples and make other followers of Jesus, help other people to become his followers. And when you're reflecting on what Jesus had said already, he kind of gives us, he gives us a new ethic that's going to just flavor everything we do from this time forward. And it is love. It's an ethic of love that we have seen in Christ as he has shown us the Father, and he has shown us the relationship between Christ, Jesus himself, and his Father. You know, I was listening to a podcast recently by an economist named Jerry Boyer, who's also a Christian. And in the podcast, he was talking about, you know, being a Christ follower at this particular moment in history. And he made two really good points that I'm just going to share here as we kind of get into our conversation today. Because they reminded me, you know, they're simple. They were actually more like reminders than anything else. And as a follower of Jesus, I listened to those and heard those two things. And I said, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. He said, you know, as followers of Jesus, we should have our heads about us, basically. There should be a calmness and it's not that we're not troubled. It's not we don't have trouble, but because of the presence of Christ and the Spirit, there's a calmness and a peace about us. That's his gift to us that Jerry said should be causing other people to ask us as followers of Jesus, why are you so calm? You know, why are you so peaceful? Yeah. And the other thing he said, which was a reminder to me as listening to him, was that God is going to, and he's always done this, he's going to entrust his resources and money particularly, but resources into the hands of his people, because he knows that we will bless and help other people.
That's awesome.
Right? It's like God just saying, you know what? I know if I keep my people employed, if I keep my people with what they need and bless them, then I can trust that they're going to help others.
Like he's done historically throughout all of time, like Joseph, the story of Joseph.
Exactly. Yeah. There's just all kinds of examples of that, right?
Yeah.
And of course, anchored right there in the middle of all that, following Jesus now after the resurrection is what we many people know, of course, as the Great Commission, Matthew 28, where Jesus says, "I'm sending you out. You're going to make disciples. You're going to help other people become my followers." And as I said, there's an ethic there that he's giving, and it's an ethic of love that flavors everything that we're going to do, flavors this life that we're living, even if we're living in the middle of a pandemic. It shapes everything we do. It's love, and so he gives us this new love of loving the Father, and also loving our neighbors, ourselves. Right, that's what you see in Mark, and so we're gonna take a closer look at that right now, and as we do. In this time that we have together, just so you know where we're going, we're going to be taking a look at this new ethic of love that Jesus has given us, how it shapes and motivates and is the power and dynamic behind what he's called us to do today, then and now. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but pandemic, no pandemic, things are going great, things aren't going great. You know, as Christ followers, we're still answering that call. And maybe in some ways, it's maybe as critical now as any other time, you know, when we are in the time that we live in, like particularly the pandemic we live in, right? And so he's given us this love for each other and the love for the Father. So we're going to take a look at that. So here's what we're going to do. So we're going to tell you right at the outset. We're going to look at the love of the Father today, the three of us. And by the way, it's nice to have Ruth back and Josh in this conversation. And we're going to look at the love of the Father. And then we're going to look at the love of neighbor. And then thirdly, we're going to look at love for our brothers and sisters in Christ, other Christians who are following the same commission and doing the same thing that Jesus has asked all of us to do. So what we'll do today in this webcast, we'll look at the love of the Father and the love of our neighbor. Then we're going to send you to our YouTube channel to catch part three, the last bit of this, the love of that exists between us as brothers and sisters in Christ. So that's, you get all three bits. Two now, and then the third part when you go to the YouTube channel. So let's take a look at and listen to Jesus answering a question about the greatest commandment, right? And it's his opportunity to talk about the love of the Father. And so this is Jesus answering. He says, the most important one, or the most important commandment is, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind, and all of your strength. And the second greatest commandment, is this, love your neighbor as yourself. And there is no greater commandment than these." And those are the two we're going to look at right now in this this webcast: love of the Father and love of our neighbor. Now, Jesus, of course, is quoting from Deuteronomy 6, 4, and 5, and you can go back and see it there. So Jesus, in some way, isn't saying something new. Like many times, he's drawing on what God has already revealed, but it's coming through the words of Jesus. It's coming through the person of Jesus, who is the Messiah, and he calls us back to something that Jesus and every other Jewish person would pray every day of their lives, at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. So taking a look at the love of the Father, when you look at the context, maybe when Jesus responds to this, what is standing out to you? I know it's a very broad, you know, love the Father with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. You know, there's a lot there. Where do your thoughts go when you first see that, when you hear that again? How does God, I'll start with you, Josh. How does God speak to you through this
particular passage? Yeah, so first, the first question I asked is like, well, what kind of love is this? You know, so obviously it isn't like a romantic love, but then you start looking in. So I went and looked at the Greek on it, and it's agape love. And so what agape love is it's a sacrificial kind of love that's selfless, like willful, pure. And it's like a love that intentionally desires like the highest intention or good for another person. And that's the kind of love that that he's talking about here, is an agape kind of love. And so I was like, wow, okay, that's a great love. So it's a sacrificial kind of love. And it's a love that, like, it's not demanding anything back. It's just like you desire the best for somebody. Mm-hmm. You desire, like, this, the highest amount of good for someone and the highest amount of love. And so that's the kind of love that he's calling us to love the Father and then also love our neighbor with. So first of all, that's the kind of love, right? Hmm. And then the second thing that really jumps out at me is like that I just thought about now is that when you're telling us about like the times of uncertainty, like when Christ calls us to these things, he's not calling us to these things off far from the future. He's calling us to this new missional way of living, like right now. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me think about like our modern church and like how church has been, where like so many of us see missions as something that, like, you know, you make sure all your ducks in a row are at home first, and then you go off and do missions. Mm-hmm. And like, that's just kind of how I grew up seeing missions, right? Mm-hmm. But like, he says no, like, love now. Mm-hmm. Love in the present, love in like the difficulties, like in the present now, and then love sacrificially now. And it makes so much more sense that it's a sacrificial love now, because right now it takes a little bit more to love someone because of the present situations that we're in with the virus. Mm-hmm. Back then it took a little bit more to love someone because, well, they were in this time of uncertainty as well. And that's the kind of love that he's calling us, the church. And I think that's like a realignment. And, you know, like, it helps kind of frame this whole, like, that's the kind of love that, well, the church should be known for. Mm-hmm.
I think what you're saying is too, that this kind of love that doesn't like happen when I'm feeling good.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's...
It's love at all times.
Yeah, it's love at all times. If I you know, it's not going good for me, you know, it's still my response. It's a loving response.
Like, if my kids are hungry, like, it doesn't matter how I feel about them at that moment. Like, I have to feed my kids.
Yeah.
But I'm doing it out of love, because an obligation of love, mm-hmm. because I desire goodness for them, the best for them, right? Mm-hmm. So regardless of how I feel, I'm going to act sacrificially in this moment and serve my children.
Yeah. When you, you know, for Ruth or any of us, you know, so he, you know, he breaks us down into love the Lord your God with all of your heart, your soul, your mind, and strength. What's that saying to you? And you know, each one of those kind of divisions, you know, how do you?
That's my favorite part of this is that each of us have been created so beautifully and in complex ways, that there's different dimensions to who we are. Mm. So here is talking about loving the Lord your God with all your heart. So with your emotions and your desires and with all your soul. And here I think it means spirit.
Right.
Sometimes soul means your mind and your will. But later here it talks about your mind. So your thoughts, your thought life. And with all your strength, your ability and your energy. So I don't know. I always think in terms of questions. Well, how do I love the Lord with all my heart? Mm-hmm. How do I love the Lord with my emotions? How do I love the Lord with my thoughts? How do I love the Lord with my energy and my abilities? And what does it look like to be a whole person loving the Lord, holistically loving the Lord? What does that look like? Because we can just do these little actions, but they can be superficial. And it's not really to the inner parts of our being. And what God desires is that all, every bit of us loves him and follows him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's beautiful too, because like it says with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength, right? And so like one thing about scripture is when they repeat a phrasing, it puts emphasis up on it. Here it says with all your, like he says that four times, right? Heart, soul, mind, and strength, with all your. So it means all encompassing, everything. And it's just, it's like a just beating down to the point of like, I really mean everything.
Yeah.
And especially in scripture, when they repeat multiple times over and over, it really lays down that emphasis on like every fabric of your being and not just like one thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, and I agree. I think it's a comprehensive, you know, we get to all four. So it's, you know, so every relationship that I have, you know, every day I go to work, every day I go to, and I'm just, that's kind of my context, right? I think, you know, Father, how do I love you in this relationship? How do I love you in this relationship? You know, how do I love you in this task that I've been, this work assignment I've been giving? You know, how do I, so every, you know, that's like the question, how do I love you in every, you know, aspect of what I have.
That seems really hard now that we break it down like this.
Yeah.
Like, that's really hard. Yeah. And that's every moment of your life too. You're like, wow, I fall short quite often in this commandment then. Because like every single moment you're like, whoa, like I've already failed this many times throughout the day. You know, so like, but that's, it seems like it's difficult, but like, you know, earlier we said like how grace is just like breathing. I'm pretty sure this is just like breathing as well, but like you got to get to a point where like you're cognitively like doing this, but also like unconsciously doing it.
Yeah.
And it just seems difficult to me. Like this seems like I'm failing all the time. Like, Lord, give me wisdom how to do this.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're right. It probably starts out as kind of wooden and stiff, you know, God, you know, you maybe the beginning of the day or whatever, or this week, I'm going to meet Ruth. I'm going to be over here. How do I love you, Father, through this? And, but right. You're probably right. In times just, it's like breathing. You're just kind of loving the thought. You just, it's just how to, it's just like a frame of reference for you.
It gives me hope. So maybe
that's
it
great.
Discouraged
that's
you.
That's good. Like, we can talk after about like how it gives you hope.
Maybe it discourages you or feels like, oh, I've got this whole checklist or report card. But I think more like it just kind of breaks it down into more simplistic terms for me to think, okay, I'm really struggling with my thought life right now. So God, what does it look like for me to love you in this area? Or I'm being fearful, and I'm allowing this fear. And fear is a real emotion, and it's not a bad emotion. It's a healthy emotion, but it can be a bad emotion. It's very easily, especially during a pandemic. It can be a real liar. It can blow everything out of proportion and just tell you things that are not true about your safety and your security and where that comes from. So how can I love God with my emotions and with my thoughts? And sometimes it means taking captive of those thoughts. Okay, oh, I am totally freaking out right now, God, about this pandemic, and I don't know what we should do, but I'm just going to give that to you right now. And I'm going to stop worrying about it, and I'm going to trust you to provide the answers and the direction, and I'm just giving it to you, Lord. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's really manageable because I don't have to have the outcome. I just try to stop myself in the process and
totally
say,
receive that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. And say, and I'm very down to earth. I'm, some of you know me, and I will be very blatantly honest with you what I'm struggling with and what I'm, but it doesn't stop there. Like I'll say, oh, but I don't want to be struggling with this, so I'm going to give this to the Lord, and just that process of taking it captive and saying, Lord, I'm giving you this. It's not that I never struggled with it, right? Mm-hmm. I did. It's more, how am I going to love the Lord with that and give that to him? That I can do.
That gives me a lot of hope because I'm a checklist oriented person. Like before the day starts or if I have a lot of things to do or before the week starts, I'll make a checklist of things that I have to get done. Mm-hmm. And like if those objectives, I try to achieve all those objectives throughout the week, particularly like the most important things. And so like I'm approaching this greatest commandment like an objective. Okay, how do I love him with my mind, soul, heart, and strength? Like, and so like I'm trying to check off these things, but like it's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's like it's not a checkbox.
Yeah, right. It's not a checklist of you put on your refrigerator, right? Yeah. I mean the wholeness of life. I think even my limitations.
Yeah.
You know, I'm loving the Father with my whole heart. Mm-hmm. My soul is all of me, including my limitations, my limited capacity to trust you.
So thank you. That was awesome for me.
And it's out there. I did this prayer. They prayed it every day. Lord, Father, I'm going to love you with all my heart and soul and mind and strength.
Yeah.
And it's just powerful. I caught this of something I was preparing for today that if you go to the back to the Shema, which is what it's called in Deuteronomy 6:4, it just has three, and it's Jesus that actually adds the fourth one. Mm. Love you all my heart and soul and strength, and Jesus adds mind. Mm. That's something maybe I should be paying attention to. I mean, if Jesus adds that. And just, again, I think it's just him saying everything, we're just going to love the Father with everything. And, I'm a dad and, I'd love it when my kids tell me they love me just let me know, I love you, Daddy, when they were little, and they would say, it just feels so good, and to hear it, and maybe their capacity, or it's not like we sat down and had a deep theological conversation about, well, when you say love, it's just received, right?
Yeah. And also, kids can really pick up, and in all relationships, you can really pick up when someone says "I love you," but their actions don't show you that, right? Yeah. And there's discrepancy.
Yeah.
Mommy, you say that you love me, but you're looking at your phone. Or, there can be discrepancies in how we behave.
That's true. Like, so much, an example in our home, like, I always ask my daughters to come, like, Papa wants to give you a hug. And so they'll come and hug me. But what they always know too is whenever they hug me, I bear wrestle them and I'll clinch them, I keep them really tight, and they hate that. But whenever I ask them to come give me a hug, they know it's coming, but they come and do it because they know that I'm showing them I love them.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, okay, Father, I'll agape, give you a hug and bear wrestle with you for a little bit. But yeah, it's just like that, you have to, your actions and your words have to align. And it's easy to see the dissonance. It's actually quite simple. It's really easy to see that dissonance, and that's a challenge for a lot of people, actually.
Yeah,
it is. But maybe this is something you were getting at, Ruth, too. I think as someone who's receiving love, we always appreciate the person who And they not only use their words, but their life reflects that they love us. Yeah. You know that. It doesn't feel right if someone's just telling you all the time, but actually your experience with them is very unloving, right? And I think this is what the Father is saying, you know, and we want it. I mean, the truth is that that's kind of the relationship we want with the Father, is one where I say I love, but I also act that way too, you know, which is how he acts toward us. And love is a word, at least in English, you know, it can be real soft and gushy and, you know, as well, but it's also something very real and something tangible we can hold on to. So love the Father, and that love, I think, becomes kind of the foundation for, you know, helping other people to become followers of Jesus, following that commission, you know, hearing the words of the resurrected Christ and remembering we're on mission together, and that mission is rooted in this love relationship with the Father. And then of course Jesus, you know, links so strongly these two things, you know, love the Father and then love your neighbor as yourself. And in the Matthew telling of that, it's kind of like the lawyer, probably a religious lawyer, but not like maybe a lawyer we might think of, you know, was asking, it says, I think, wanting to justify himself, right? You know, well, who is my neighbor? You know, so Jesus essentially quotes, I think it's Leviticus 19, to love neighbor as yourself. And he says that's the second greatest commandment. So we'll shift on to loving the Father, now loving our neighbor. And then Jesus tells this fantastic parable story in answer to that question.
Like, you know,
right? It's a great story. So I'm going to read it for us. It's you can find it in Luke chapter 10. And so Jesus says, the new ethic of the kingdom, my kingdom is love. Let's just say it starts with love of the Father, to offer our love to him and receive his love for us through Christ. And he says, right on the heels of that, right after that, is loving our neighbor. And somebody says, okay, well, then who is my neighbor? And then this is what Jesus says in response to the question. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? What is written in the law? Jesus replied, how do you read it? He answered, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength, and with all of your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. And so there, that passage, Deuteronomy 6, is in the mouth of the expert in the law. And Jesus responded, well, you've answered correctly. Do this and you will live. But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? And here comes the parable. In reply, Jesus said, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. And then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said. And when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have. And then Jesus asked this question. Which of these three, the priest or the Levite or the Samaritan, I added that part, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? The expert of the law replied, the one who had mercy on him. And then Jesus said, go and do likewise. Wow, what a great story and response. How brilliant of Jesus in his response. So just before I ask Ruth and Josh to jump in here. A little bit of background, a priest and a Levite would have been religious leaders. You know, that's who those two people were. The road from Jericho to Jerusalem was known to be a very dangerous road. Everybody knew that, right? It was just kind of like, it was just one of those things everybody knew. If you traveled on the road, there was a possibility you were going to be attacked. And actually, there was even kind of a just a general understanding you shouldn't even go by yourself because of what could happen. The man who was attacked was probably in all likelihood Jewish. The man who ended up helping was from a part of the world called Samaria, a smaller country right there by Israel, the country of Israel. And these people hated each other. These were just natural enemies. Jewish people just hated the Samaritans. The Samaritans just hated the Israelites. They just didn't like each other culturally. Long story, but just didn't like each other. So there's the shock. And we weren't there that day, but so I'm just trying to help us kind of bridge that cultural barrier right now. If you would have been listening to Jesus and hearing this story, you would have been shocked to hear that a Samaritan stopped to help a Jewish man who'd been beaten and left for dead. So you've got that tension going on as well. So that's a little bit of cultural stuff. Some of that will come out more as we talk about the story. But just maybe just begin with, we'll start with you, Ruth. You know, the story itself, the things that just kind of speak to you through the telling of the story, especially in answer maybe to the question, you know, who's my neighbor?
Yeah. Well, the guy who's asking the question, who is my neighbor, it says in verse 29, but he wanted to justify himself. So he's kind of asking this technically, who is my neighbor? So to kind of, I think, to find a loophole or to let himself off the hook on, well, okay, defining it so narrowly that he could do it. And Jesus is basically blowing his concept out of the water, first of all. And I love that. I love that about Jesus. He didn't just say a parable that was shocking. This was scandalous, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, that the hero is not the Levite. He's not the religious guy or the priest, but it's the Samaritan, the ones, you know, the Samaritans were related to the Jews. They were descendants, but they had kind of split and taken on a lot of idolatrous practices, idol worship and stuff, and mixed it in with Judaism. And so the Jews, they kind of were like, I don't even want to defile myself by walking through Samaria, because there's Judea and then there's Galilee, and in between is Samaria. So they to go to Galilee, they would have to walk through, but they would actually cross the Jordan, go around the long way, just so that they wouldn't defile themselves. Okay. That's how untouchable it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm also wondering, I mean, I don't totally blame the priest and the Levite for not stopping, because there's certain, you know, self-preservation and self, you know, just being smart and cautious. Like, there's probably people that pretended to be hurt on the side of the road, mm-hmm. to really have you stop and rob them. Or if it's you're visibly mm-hmm. hurt, then by stopping and touching them, then you could become unclean. And if you were going to Jerusalem to worship,
this whole ceremony just to get clean again. And yeah.
Right. And it would totally derail the purpose of your trip. So I get that. I have some compassion for the priest and the Levite here. But it's the Samaritan who stopped, and he didn't just, stop and take care of him. He really did an amazing job, as if it was his family member mm-hmm. taking responsibility mm-hmm. for him. And
yeah, he has to, you know, I hope you do go back and read the story, because you can see the weight of the story and more time is spent on the actions of the Samaritan, mm-hmm. and because he has to undo what should have been done. He has to do what should have been done. And I think, you know, about loving neighbor, we're going to get to the question of who is my neighbor, mm-hmm. you know, because let's make sure we circle back around, yeah. and actually answer the question, who, right. Who is the neighbor, but what is Jesus saying here? But for this man, and obviously the Samaritan is being offered up, I think, by Jesus as this is the guy who's mm-hmm. loving neighbor. Yep. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, Yes, you're right. The priest and Levite would have to love that man who was wounded would have been inconvenience. Mm-hmm. They would have been inconvenience. But often to love our neighbor means having to do what should have been done. So it does take more effort. It's really going to be. It's not just easy to love mm-hmm. our neighbor. It's not always just a simple thing. It's having to go back and correct what should have been done, yep. and then and then begin to love, right?
Mm. Yeah. You know, like again, the word the word agape comes back, mm. and like this Samaritan, it was really sacrificial. He had to go way out of his way to recorrect everything mm. out of love, and then. He did it because he wanted the best, the highest good for this, mm. for the person who was robbed and beaten, mm. and like so just circling back to the form of love that he was displaying to this neighbor, and speaking of that question about neighbor though, it makes me think like we often don't get to choose our neighbor, mm. whoever this neighbor may be.
Yeah,
we don't get to choose our neighbor. In this situation, he did not get to choose this particular situation, this scenario, but that in the present moment was his neighbor. So that helps us answer the question, who is our neighbor? Mm-hmm. Our neighbor is quite often someone who we have no control is our neighbor. And will we go to the lengths to love mm-hmm. that person sacrificially? Mm-hmm. It's not convenient. Sometimes it might not be convenient. Will we go to the lengths to sacrificially love something that is not convenient to do,
right.
As Christ calls us to?
Right. It really opens up, the possibility that anyone could be our neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be everyone, right?
And quite likely your enemy.
Yes.
And quite likely someone who you just don't jive with, you don't get along with. And we all have those people in our lives. And So this is quite a challenge that Jesus is giving people too. It's not like he's not telling you to go and do an easy kind of love. He's telling you to sometimes do the hardest kind of love that you possibly can. If there's a lot of introverted people out there, this is like incredibly difficult for you. It's even more difficult for you to just like approach these people, and then now you have to go and do all these sacrificial things for this person too. It's just challenging love. It's mm-hmm. it's not as easy as it makes it seem. Like, oh yeah, it's easy to love everyone. Really, it's not. Like, love in action is much more difficult than like the cognitive love. Like loving, mm-hmm. I can love someone easily by saying I love them with my mind, and you can wish the best upon someone.
Yeah.
But to do the best upon someone is like, that's another level.
Yeah, it can love of neighbor can sound very, romantic and noble and,
yeah.
but, actually often it's very hard and during university years, I worked in a city mission, and that was just, you guys have, I know, been both in situations similar to those and, very quickly you realize this isn't going to be easy and not everybody here is a really lovely person, quite frankly,
Yeah,
and it's not easy, and you might get punched, you probably won't be thanked. Someone will probably steal from the kitchen, it's loving neighbor is not like, but it's not contingent upon just love the lovely people, love the neighbors who are really nice and will pay you back later.
Yeah. I think Jesus deliberately uses this example to show you like how far out you really have to go to love, not far, but like to the extent of what kind of person that you really need to love. And he definitely chose this example of the Samaritan just to open up your mind of who it is, because he wants you to not be in that box. Like, he wants to break you out of that box. Because mm-hmm. it's really simple to love people who you get along with.
Yeah.
It's really simple to love people who you admire or you look up to or like are kind of in your like group or your social class or even mm-hmm. Race,
Yeah.
It's
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Luke actually writes in a different chapter about Well, even sinners love their friends. Even yeah. sinners love those who are good to you. And so this is not the kind of love that God is looking for. He's not just looking at how I love Josh or how I love mm-hmm. Pastor Dale because I like them. But how do I love people I don't like? How do I love people from a different ethnicity, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. from a different nationality, from a different political party, mm-hmm. which I'm confessing I was already earlier talking about my tension in me. Yes, and how I'm struggling right now to love people of different political views. Mm-hmm. Struggle is real. is real. Struggle is real. But we have to. If this is true, if Jesus laid down his life for us and he's asking us to love others as we love ourselves, we have to love those who are different from us, those who do not deserve to be loved,
yeah.
those mm-hmm. we don't like, mm-hmm. those who cannot return anything to us. So the poor and the needy, mm-hmm. These are all people that we have to love. Mm-hmm. And it's challenging, but that's the kind of love he's called us to.
You know, the person that makes me, that when you say those things, I think of is it's highly valued by the entire world. And I think the world recognizes this kind of love, this agape love, is like Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. Amazing Christian who loved like the worst of the worst, and she was just honored by the entire world for this. And when I think about the church these days, quite often I get saddened because people, when you read the media outlets and things, people don't look upon the church in this way. Mm-hmm. That the first things they think about when they think about like churches, quite often like, oh, you don't love this kind of person, or you don't do this, like that you shun people, and like mm. or like, you know, bigotry, or these are some big words, but like people really like think about the church in this way. And mm. like, wow, like you think of Mother Teresa, who was someone who was part of our church, the church like was loved and valued for this particular kind of love. And I think that's a call back for our church, not just our church, but all the churches, to return to a kind of an agape love where we love neighbors and we love the unloved, and mm-hmm. and that be the first things. Like, how great would it be if Christ's church was the first thing people thought about when they thought about church, was this is a place where like they love.
Yeah. Or like back to The Economist at the beginning, at Jerry Boyer, you know, God's going to give us stuff, money or resources, because we are going to love our neighbors with
yeah.
it.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and that's how we see it. Hey, we have this stuff.
And God, you know, Jesus has hope in us to do that.
Yeah.
He left this commandment, this commission to us because yeah. he has hope that, not just hope, but he trusts that we can do that. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, we're the bride of Christ, and we will be refined to be, we're eligible, but we will be refined to be that bride that is worthy to be mm-hmm. called his bride. That means that he believes that we can carry this mission out. Mm-hmm. He will equip us to carry that mission out. Mm-hmm. Can we, like, let's do it. Let's be the generation that does that now. Mm-hmm. And we have a chance to, on the heels of something like this, like, I pray that be true, that God gives all the churches right now, like, just an amazing equipping us with wealth and with things that we can bless the world, and mm-hmm. we can love our neighbors properly the way that Christ calls us to. Mm.
Yeah, you know, I think in this story, you know, in some ways, the priest and the Levite, I mean, these are institutional mm-hmm. people, yep. right? You know, and one thing that I take away from me is that, you know, institutions will sometimes fail us, but at the same time, it's not so much the focus on what the institution didn't do as much as here's one man, the Samaritan, who wasn't waiting for the institution or those guys somebody else that was supposed to do something about this. He just said, I see a person in need. I'm going to do something about it. Yeah.
And you're right. Yeah. Cause the transformation comes person by person.
Yeah.
And the revolution, I guess you could say, comes person by person. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't wait for the institution, we can do it in your own personal actions right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it comes down to the last verse. It says, the one who had mercy on him. Like, mm-hmm. that's the defining trait. Mm-hmm. And also in that other passage about loving your enemies and that you, you know, that even sinners love those who love them. But the last verse is, verse 36 is, you must be compassionate just as your Father is compassionate. Mm-hmm. So it's something about our Father is compassionate, and so we must be compassionate. Mm-hmm. Our Father is merciful, so we must be merciful. And to continually be aligning ourselves with God's nature, because that's how he wants us to live. Mm-hmm. He wants us to reflect him, and we don't always do that. We fall short of that often. And yet that's how he has designed this whole process. He didn't wait for us to become master Jedis or, you know, anything like that. He called us to be disciples and like not to be masters. Like, we're never going to get it all right. Mm-hmm. We're just going to be on the journey of learning to be more like him. And along the way, we're going to be bringing people on that journey as well.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe before they even believe. Mm-hmm. I believe discipleship starts before people believe.
Mm-hmm.
You start sowing seeds of righteousness and truth and integrity. And that starts changing awesome. People yeah. and, mm-hmm. and you're bringing them along. Yeah. And you're like clearing the soil, you know, that other parable about the farmer and the seeds that go in, and there's mm-hmm. rocks and there's thorns and there's different things. But, you know, along the way that you're clearing the soil so that those seeds of faith can take root and grow in people's lives. And I think that's what the journey of discipleship looks like.
I think that's awesome, especially when you said it starts before, like, someone's salvation.
That's my own theory. I don't know if it's biblical, but I'll just throw that out there.
No, I like it. I like it.
I love it though. You know, like, we should be living our lives in that way. And what it does is it also, like, it goes back to Pastor Dale says, like, it takes away the whole, like, waiting for, like, administration to take place. Like, it's a personal thing. It's a very mm-hmm. personal thing. And it happens in your interactions even before something becomes, like, instituted. Like, mm-hmm. even before you get labeled something, you already begun discipling someone. You know, it's kind of like a Mr. Miyagi, like, wax on, wax offing, like, sand the floor, paint the fence. Like, he didn't know it, but he was being discipled at that moment. And we can do that.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
It's true, right?
Yeah. Like, he was becoming a karate rock star.
He didn't know. But sand the floor was protecting him from leg kicks and stuff like that.
Well, I think one of the exciting things too about the Great Commission is, and I know you talked about this last week, and just it's not just that God Jesus commissioned us to go out and to make disciples of all nations, but he says, "And surely I am with you always to the end of the age."
Yeah.
So it's not just that he's abandoning us to go and, you know, do the work for him, that he is with us. Mm-hmm. And together he empowers us to do it. And it's significant. Mm. Every little last thing that we do is significant because Jesus is there with us doing it.
Mm-hmm.
That, for me, I really thrive in, like, synergy in groups and working together on things, even if it's insignificant things. It becomes more significant when I do it with people and my energy rises. And I feel that with Jesus. Mm. Like, he didn't just leave me to do things on my own.
Yeah.
He's there with me, and I don't have to freak out about not being able to do it well or not being able to check all the boxes.
That's very encouraging for me. Yeah, absolutely. Because like I told you, like I'm a box checker, and to know that, like, he's with me every single step. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have to be so concerned about checking off boxes, but that the master is, like, with me each step of the way.
Yeah.
And then he sent his spirit, the helper, to be with me each step of the way so I can make the right decisions at the right moment. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's just, that gives me a lot of peace. So if you're a box checker like me, God is with you each moment.
Don't worry. There's hope.
There's hope. Hey, we're gonna wrap this up for now. And as I said at the beginning of the talk, there's a part three, because we talked about loving the Father. The new ethic of the kingdom is love. Loving the Father, loving our neighbor, and loving each other within the church, within the community of faith. And so that's the part we didn't get to, but that's going to be the other talk on our YouTube channel, which you're going to be able to see how to get there right here on the screen before you leave today's webcast. So as we wrap things up today, I'm reminded that when Jesus gets to the end of this parable, it started with a question, who is my neighbor? But essentially, it has Jesus asking a question, his own question at the end, which is basically, will you be a neighbor? And you know, I think the time that we're living right now, we talked about this along the way. I mean, it's not denying that we don't have troubles, or it's not, as they say, you know, sticking your head in the sand and, you know, pretending, oh, you know, nothing's going on. It's in the midst of trouble, or in the midst of the, as Jesus said, in this world we would have troubles, that really, as followers of Jesus, we show ourselves to be following him and like him, and that even now we can be loving as he loved, loving the Father as he loved the Father, and loving neighbors as he loved us. In fact, one person said that perhaps Jesus has cast himself in the role of the Samaritan. Just as the Samaritan in this story is a despised outsider, that Jesus himself was a despised outsider who came to bind our wounds and heal our hearts and our lives. And that's what he's done. And he's called us to do the same in every season, the good ones and the ones where the sun is shining, and in the seasons where things are not so great and they're hard. But wow, what an opportunity we have as his children to show forth the love of God.